Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today is Emma Phipps. She's been involved in campaigns against wildlife persecution with an emphasis on direct action on the ground, as well as animal liberation and environmental campaigns for about 12 years. She's been working in the west of England for 3 years now against the local fox hunts and the recent culling of the European badger in small groups of friends called Three Counties Hunt Saboteurs. So first, thank you for your work, and second, thank you for being on the program.
No problem. Thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure.
So, tell me about fox hunting. What is fox hunting, and how long has it been going on? Just provide an introduction to it, please.
Okay. Obviously, the basics of fox hunting is it's about hunting foxes. The reasons behind it have changed on and off across the country as well as over the years. So it's been going on for quite a few years, like centuries now, but in different forms. It's now a lot more like a sport. It's they still use pest control as an excuse for doing it, as well as tradition. But it used to be more about pest control. Now, I don't believe that fox population needs to be managed, it needs to be culled. I don't agree with killing one animal in order to protect another animal that you're then going to kill for meat or shoot or exploit in other ways. But it used to be a different form. So little fox hunts were like packs of dogs, and local farmers or local people would get together, and they would go to an area where sheep or lambs had been killed the night before, and they would try to find the fox that had done it. These days, it's all about managing land, managing woodlands, managing areas, so that there is a bigger fox population with an aim to hunt them for sport. It's a lot less. They don't really show that it's about pest control anymore, whereas usually where they used to go to areas where there had been predation of, game birds for shooting or agricultural animals. These days it's just going to any area, and if you can chase a fox and kill it, great, it's a sport. That's what the aim seems to be a lot more for most of the packs across the UK now. So, yeah, it's basically fox hunting. Hunting foxes, it's changed a lot over the years, but it's predominantly it's a sport, with tradition being the excuse for many people as to why they're still doing it.
Well, let's back up a little bit. And are foxes native to Great Britain, and are they and whom do they normally eat? What should their population be, and so on?
It's quite a difficult one to say what their population should be, because we constantly go into areas where they live, and we build our own buildings, we build roads, we destroy their habitat for farmland and for other industries. So I'm not actually sure what the fox population should be anymore. We, as humans in the UK, we generally say that that species is overpopulated, there are too many foxes, or there are too many badgers, or there are too many rabbits. But that's based on how much land we've left them to live in. It's based on how much land we haven't destroyed, and how many of them are then trying to fit into that land that they have left. We've got the red fox here in England, and they would tend to go for sort of small mammals. They go for rats, roadkill, they're scavengers, they're dogs, so they're scavengers predominantly, but they will kill the birds and small mammals most of the time. If they're really stuck for food, they can go for farmed animals. So a lot of the time people say, yeah, but they kill chickens, they kill lots of chickens, they went into my garden, they killed all my chickens. And you're like, well, what were your chickens in? They're like, well, the fox got under the fence and then they killed them all. It's like, so your chickens couldn't get away. Basically, you made it so that the chickens were unable to escape anyway. Or people say, yes, they kill all the sheep. And it's like, well, no animal's going to go to unnecessary extents to kill a lot of animals that they don't need to eat. So foxes in a tough position where they haven't found any other food, might go for a lamb. might go for a sheep that's ill and on the ground anyway. They might go for chickens if they're in an easy place for which to catch them. But most of the time, you find them eating roadkill or you know, going after small birds or small mammals.
And so, when I think of fox hunting, what I think of is the you know, standard thing you see in movies of somebody who's a member of the House of Lords who gathers a bunch of people and then they all say tally-ho and send dogs out to chase the foxes. Is that in any way accurate, or is this completely inaccurate?
Again, it depends on the pack in the country. So there are hundreds of fox hunts across the UK. Most of them are registered with the Masters of Foxhounds Association, but you also have unregistered packs as well. Quite a few of the hunts will have some people within them that are upper class. They've got land, they've got a lot of money, they're wealthy, they have status, and they tend to be the masters of the hunt. They're the ones who the hunt relies on. If they're not getting enough money from their supporters, the masters would have to dip into their own pockets to keep the hunt going. A lot of the people, like the huntsmen, the whipper-in, basically the hunt staff, the people who look after the hounds, a lot of them, you know, they're from different backgrounds. They might be better off. They might be sort of local farmers that've got into hunt work. But they are, they're hunt servants. They're just staff. They can come from different backgrounds. We do have fox hunts here that members of the royal family have been out with. The Prime Minister, who we had until a couple of months ago, David Cameron, he used to ride and he supports, used to ride with and he supports one of the most prestigious hunts in the UK called the Heathrop Hunt. And they've got a large area of land across which they hunt in the west of England and into Oxfordshire. So you do have some hunts that still have very well-known people going out with them, whether they're celebrities, royal family, members of parliament or even prime ministers. But yeah, it depends on the hunt. Some of them are much more local. One of the hunts that we have here is the Cotswold Vale Farmers Hunt. And it really is just, while there are a couple of people that have more money, they are a lot, they're not as rich. And it is more about local community as opposed to showing off your status. So yeah, there's an element of truth, but a lot of people have a misconception about hunts. Even hunt saboteurs in this country have a misconception that all hunters have a lot of money. It's a very upper class thing to do. And while there is some truth in that, it's definitely not a generalization that can be accurately made.
Even in terms of, I mean, it's expensive to own and train dogs too. So it sounds, I mean, this is sounding like it's actually quite a big industry. I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of money involved in this, even at the local level.
Yeah, there's they collect subscriptions from their riders. So the people who go out riding with the hunt to support them, to go on the chase, to follow the hunt around while the dogs are doing their work. They're known as the field, and each one of them will pay a membership subscription for the year. And quite often a cap will be paid on the day for followers that are in their cars or on foot as well. So you're constantly donating money to the hunt that you're going out with. We often get asked if we'll donate, and they're like, "You're following the hunt, you should donate." We're like, "Yes, but you know, our wonderful company is what we're providing for you." So they do. There is a lot of money that changes hands. Again, the masters of the hunt and the hunt committee will manage most of the money, and they'll be the ones that it all falls back to if there isn't enough income coming in from supporters. But they also, a lot of them have other sort of smaller business ideas as well. They a lot of the hunts will take in fallen stock from farms, as they call it. So they'll have a flesh wagon, a vehicle that drives around, picks up animals that are dead or dying from nearby farms, and the farms will pay them an amount of money for that, and then the dead animals are often fed to the hounds, like the dogs at the hunt. But yeah, most of the money does come in from donations and subscriptions from their supporters.
So walk us through a hunt, not a hunt sab yet, but a hunt. So walk us through, do they gather at 4 in the morning? Does it start at noon? So walk us through from beginning to end of a hunt.
So the hunting year technically starts on the 1st of May. This is where huntsmen and hunt staff will change over. Some of them go to other hunts. Some of them retire. Some of them have just started at a new hunt. Some of them move up from being a lower hunt member or member of staff to the huntsman. So they get to know their area. Any of the new dogs, the puppies or the new ones taken from other packs will start to be integrated into the kennels. They will send any puppies away to supporters' homes so that they can be walked, they can get used to people, they can learn good manners. And then towards the end of the summer, they'll all start going back to the kennel so that they can learn how to be as a pack. They learn what their job is. And then at the start of September or even late in August, they will go out cub hunting. They now call it autumn hunting a lot more. But basically the idea is to train the pack, get them all the hounds to learn how to hunt as a pack, what they're hunting, how they're hunting, what noises to make, what the master and the huntsman telling them what to do. So it's all about training the pack to hunt like a pack, the right noises, the right prey, and the right behavior whilst out there. It also it gets the country, the area that the hunt go into, it gets it ready for hunting so they can see the land, they can get used to it. Come the start of November, it will be the main season. So then they'll go out. Cub hunting tends to happen very early in the morning, so sometimes they will be meeting at 4 a.m., sometimes 5, sometimes 6. It's all about getting out before the sun comes up, and because the smell of the foxes will evaporate when the day becomes warmer. So they go out earlier so that they can take advantage of the cooler morning, the dew still on the ground. The foxes are all huddled up in family units in different areas, so they're easier to find. Once the main season starts, most hunts will meet at 11 a.m. for most days, sometimes going out 2 or 3 times a week. Some of them will go out about 4, some even 5 times in some weeks. It depends on, usually it depends on how many people they have working for them, because there's a lot of work going into getting the horses and the hounds ready for each day's hunting. So if you've got a lot of servants to help you, it's a lot easier to get the horses ready more days per week. They'll start at about 11 a.m., usually go on until about 4 or 5, maybe even until it gets dark. And they'll just go between different areas. They'll go between different woods, different hedgerows. Anywhere that a fox might hide up is known as a cover. And they'll go between those and try and pick up on the scent of the fox. And obviously, if they pick up on the scent of the fox, they'll give chase. There's a lot of differences between cub hunting and hunting in the main season in terms of what their behavior is and what their aims are. But the general idea, obviously, is to pick up on the scent of a fox and to then give chase and kill if they're able to. But a lot of people are out to watch the dogs work and the hunt work. So the basic idea remains the same across the whole season. In our area of the country, they will finish at the end of March or the beginning of April. So most hunts will be packed up around that time, and then it all starts again the following autumn.
And so so the dogs pick up a scent of a fox, are at that point, have the dogs been released from leashes? Are they just running free, and are people following on horses? Is that generally what happens? And then what happens then? I mean, do they shoot the fox, or does the fox get killed by the dogs? How often does the fox get away? What happens next?
So the dogs are always free. Once they're out of the, they usually have a big trailer that looks a bit like a large horse box, and they all get brought out of that at the meet. So it'll be at someone's house or a pub or some kind of venue where they all meet up and have a little bit of a social before they leave, and then they'll move on, and the hounds will follow the huntsmen or be around the huntsmen as a pack. Other hunt members try to stop them going off onto main roads or into people's gardens and so on. And then they'll go to the first, say, wood that they want to look for a fox. The huntsman will go towards the wood and he will give a signal to the hounds. They will cast out. So they'll go into the wood, they'll split up to a certain extent, and they'll all look for a scent. They hunt by smell. So as soon as they pick up on a smell, a hound will start making an excited noise, so it will speak. It will make a sort of excited yapping noise. The huntsman then knows that there's some kind of smell in the woods that they're trying to pick up on, and the other hounds will also go towards where that hound is making the noise. Once they've picked up on a smell and they're following it, and as they're on it, they know where they're going, they're following where the smell leads to, they'll make a very excited noise as a pack. It'll be a lot of baying, a lot of very excited yapping, and it'll be continuous. So then the huntsman knows that they've picked up on this scent and they're giving chase. Normally, if a fox is going to be killed, it'll be killed by the hounds. They will catch it. Sometimes they'll obviously kill it quickly, bite to the back of the neck, or the fox will... sometimes they do get ripped apart, and obviously then it depends on the situation how sort of quickly they die. A lot of foxes do get away without intervention. Sometimes the pack loses a scent, or a fox goes across an area where there's a stronger smell. They'll go through a field of sheep. They'll go past a like compost heap or on farmland slurry pits, anything that's got a strong smell. A lot of foxes know their country very well, like their habitat, where they live, so they know where smelly things are anyway, and they'll naturally try to foil their scent by going through something that's smellier than they are. So foxes do get away with or without our intervention. But sometimes they also go to ground, so they'll seek shelter in a badger set or a fox earth or an oversized rabbit warren, anywhere that they can get to ground, a stick pile, rock piles, cracks and crevices in different mountains or cliff faces. So they'll go anywhere they can get into to try and get away from the hounds. And at that point, sometimes a hunt will have people out with them that have terrier dogs, obviously smaller dogs, that they can put in there, and they basically try to scare the fox out from its hiding place, either to continue the hunt or to shoot or kill the fox in another way. So it's very dependent on the situation, what has happened, what the country is like, whether they're on land they're supposed to be on and whether we're present. So the situation can vary quite dramatically from one day to another.
So you said cub hunts. What does that mean?
So they start at sort of the end of August, the beginning of September. Most foxes will be born in sort of February, March or April. So they'll be around 6 months old at this point. So they're still living in family units. They're a lot closer to the rest of their family, their siblings, their mother. So they'll be living in a wood sort of together. And the idea is that they're inexperienced. They don't know what hunting is. And they're easier targets for the pack, so the pack can learn how to kill. They'll learn what the taste and the smell and the sight of a fox is. They will learn from the older hounds and the more experienced hounds how to hunt them and what they're trying to do. So cubs are basically the perfect choice for the hunt because they're much easier targets with which to train their hounds. So they basically go out and they do what the name suggests. They tend to try and hunt cubs. They also kill older foxes at the same time. It depends on what scent they get onto, whether it's an older fox or a cub. But they also, any foxes that do escape, any cubs that do escape, are considered to be braver. They'll escape out into the open and the hunt will see them as good sport for the future, because they've run, hopefully, in the main season, they'll give the hunter a long chase. So they tend to, in a cub hunting, they tend to allow those foxes to escape, at least in the first few weeks. They'll let them escape because then they'll hope that they'll have a good long chase later on in the main season when they hunt that area again.
Something that I had no clue, many things I've had no clue about that you've educated me about here, is that you say they happen 3, 4, 5 times a week. This is like a full-time job. This is not like,
yeah,
this is not like the World Cup in soccer. This is not just something that they get together and do once in a year for a big, you know, like, yeah, somebody's going to get married or something, so they have a fox hunt, which is stupid as that would be. But this is a regular job.
Yeah, it is. For the hunt staff, that tends to be their full-time job. The hunt masters might have other jobs, or they might be farmers. They might have their own businesses, or they might work elsewhere. The masters are the ones with the more money. But for the hunt staff, they tend to live in tied cottages, so they will live at the kennels or very near to the kennels, and that will be their full-time job. They're constantly looking after the hounds. They're constantly organizing. The masters do a lot of the organizing the hunts, but the huntsman will do a lot of the on-the-ground work. He will do the actual hunting and so on. And then the masters and the committee of the hunt do all the sort of paperwork and organization for it. But for the huntsman, that is what he is paid to do. That is his job.
The people who do this and the people who follow it, they do their sport, in quotes, more often than to use the UK term, football players. I mean, they have what? How many matches do they have? They have one match a week or something?
Quite often, yeah. I think, again, it depends on the football team. But, yeah, they're... it's not usually as often as a fox hunt. We've got a couple around here who cub hunting will take place. Usually for most hunts, it will be at least 3 times a week between the end of August and the start of November, because they want to train their pack. They want to make sure they're going to be really efficient killing machines and really good hunters when it comes to the main season. I think most of the hunts that we go out with in this area will go out twice a week. So some of them go out on Saturdays. It's kind of a traditional day for a lot of the hunts to go out on, but not all of them will. In this area, we could basically go out 6 days a week. They don't hunt on Sundays, but we could go out 6 days a week in this area. And on many of those days, have a choice of which hunt to go to, because there'll be, you know, 4 or 5 hunts going out on the same day, and that's just in the area that I live in.
So I told my mom I was going to do this interview, and she said to me, I thought fox hunting had been made illegal. And then I looked it up on the internet, and for what this is worth, and it's like, yeah, fox hunting is now illegal in the UK since 2005 or something like that. So I don't understand what's going on.
For many decades, there's been a lot of controversy over fox hunting. There's been lots of debates in Parliament and just amongst the public about fox hunting, whether it's a tradition that should stay, whether it's sort of, it shows English people as they're supposed to be, whether it's pest control, whether it's a beautiful sport, whether it's, you know, cruel and inhumane or unethical. There's been debates for decades about whether fox hunting should be banned. And then back in the early 2000s, they did actually start thinking about whether they could do it properly, whether they might actually get a ban in place. But a lot of people see it as more of a public gesture.
Are you there? The phone?
You're still there. Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so the last thing I heard was that a lot of people see it as a public gesture.
Yeah.
So, you know, Wikipedia is a crap source, so we'll just acknowledge that. But Wikipedia is saying it's been outlawed. So evidently the PR is working. Tell me how this works. To what degree has it actually been outlawed? And what, I don't, obviously it hasn't.
No.
Oops, the phone's crapping out. I can't hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you again. There's occasional strange noises on the line.
Okay, so why? How are they still having them if it has been, if whatever happened in 2005?
So they brought in the Hunting Act, and it was actually supposed to be enforced in February 2005. A lot of people were like, yes, they've banned hunting, they've finally done it, they've banned hunting. And we still get people coming up to us now and being like, but it's illegal, why are these people not in prison? And you're just thinking, well, you know, it's very difficult to prove that they're actually hunting. And
they're on horses with dogs who are tearing a fox apart, and they have their stupid red outfits, and you can't prove it, and it's public, and everybody knows it's going to happen on Saturday. I'm sorry.
That's basically what most people's reaction is in the country. If you look at the law itself, it explains in the long title of the legislation. It says it prohibits hare coursing and makes provision for hunting with dogs. So it basically sets out a few more regulations for fox hunting as opposed to actually fully outlawing it. So you've basically got a situation where they say that they're laying a false scent on the ground. They say that they soak a rag in a smelly substance and then they drag it along the floor, and that is what the hounds then chase. It's not actually real foxes that they're chasing, but this false smell that's been laid on the floor for them to follow instead. And there are some hunts that actually do that. We've got drag hunts in the country that have done that since, I think, the early 19th century. It's not about chasing a real animal. It's about just following a scent and enjoying the way that the dogs work and enjoying jumping. It's all about jumping and a predetermined route to take in lots of sort of really good horse work. So you can jump and you can go across really nice countryside. And it's not about chasing an animal. But there's still dogs involved. So the fox hunts have been like, oh, well, we can just pretend that we're doing that instead. So we'll say that we're...
And
we'll say that we're laying a false trail on the ground as well, and that can be our excuse. So you see a hunt out, and people are like, no, they're just trail hunting. They're following a trail. They're not following a fox. They're not hunting. And it's very difficult to prove otherwise. You've then got a situation where the legal system don't really see it as a priority. They're not so keen on wildlife crime, especially things like fox hunting. And a lot of the police then don't know what hunting looks like anyway, never mind illegal hunting. So you've got a situation, let's say we've got us as hunt saboteurs, we've got the hunt and we've got the police, and we say they're chasing foxes, and we even show them a video of the hunt chasing a fox, and the hunt say, oh yeah, but it was an accident, we laid a false trail nearby and then a fox popped up in front of the hounds, and of course the hounds gave chase, and the police go, yeah, it kind of sounds plausible. There's no recklessness clause. There's no, but you shouldn't have laid the trail there. Why did you do that?
Well, and even if it was, you only get to make that excuse like once. You don't get to make that excuse five times a week.
But they do. And it's extremely difficult for us to prove otherwise, unfortunately. You have to have a lot of stuff on camera that proves that there was a fox in the area, that the hounds were chasing it, and that the huntsman intended kill the fox as well, that he intended to chase the fox. It's very difficult to prove intent, unfortunately, unless you have a lot of encouragement and sort of people making it very obvious they've seen the fox and then immediately gone to where the fox has run. So it's a lot about getting the right things on camera, unfortunately, in order to prove that a hunt is actually illegally hunting.
So I really understand everything you're saying. I mean, the same thing happens with attempting to like if a forester in this country cuts trees illegally, it's a big deal to actually try to get anybody to care. And the same with poaching generically. If somebody shoots a bear or somebody shoots something else, they generally try to give them the benefit of the doubt every step of the way. And of course, this shouldn't surprise us because the same thing happens with the sexual assault of women. You know, it's like,
if people are finding it difficult to even take something seriously that's happening to another person of the same species, it's very difficult to to make them care or help them care about an animal of another species or a tree, which isn't even seen as a sentient being. So, yeah, if people can't care about other humans, it's not a surprise, really, that they don't care about other animals or other living beings.
So I have a couple questions before we go into the SAB stuff. There's still some stuff I'm not understanding. One is that, what about issues? I mean, obviously they're not chasing foxes on a 2-acre parcel. So do they have? I mean, what? Aren't there some people who say, "Get the hell off my land"? I mean, does this ever happen that they run into problems with? I mean, if I owned land and some fox hunters started to come across it, I'd be like, what the hell are you doing? You don't get to cross here. Get your dogs off my property. Doesn't that ever happen? Because aren't they traveling all over the landscape?
Yeah, obviously, especially if they are chasing a real fox. A real fox isn't going to go, oh, well, yeah, I shouldn't go through there because that's someone else's property. They're going to go there, and the hunter going to go after them. There are some areas that they're definitely not allowed in, and they're like, oh, we always get in trouble if we go into those areas. So sometimes the fox will escape by pure luck of going onto land, which is anti-hunt. There are situations where we found them in wildlife and nature reserves in the past. They've gone onto people's land, terrified their flocks of sheep. Some hunts have killed pet cats, even small pet dogs, terrified people's children, just tried to traipse in through gardens and things like that. We often find some of the local hunts going into people's gardens, especially the hounds, if not the people as well. A lot of the people in the area are really scared to say that they're anti-hunt. They really don't want to say it. They think they're going to be ostracized by the rest of the community. No one wants to be that first person to say, hey, I'm anti-hunt. Is anyone else in this area anti-hunt? Because they think that they'll then be targeted by the people who like the hunt or who are friends with the hunt or by the hunt themselves. So a lot of people are really scared of doing things like that. There is a really nice organization called Hounds Off, and it's just an online resource run by a guy who's sabbed and monitored hunts for decades, and it's basically just giving people advice and help on how to keep hunts off your property if you don't want them on there. But again, unfortunately, a lot of quite wealthy landowners and people that own a lot of the land in a lot of areas do like the hunt going onto their land, or they are part of the hunt, or they support the hunt. And sometimes people just don't realize if they own a field in an area, you know, a couple of miles away from where they live, they're not going to know if the hunt has gone across there.
Right.
The hunt do want to have long chases. They want to go as far as they can, really, to the point where we've had to run onto main roads or, you know, scream at the hunt that your hounds have just gone onto a motorway or your hounds are on a railway. Like, what are you doing to get them off there? You need to get down there. And sometimes they don't even realize that their hounds have gone missing or have strayed onto a railway or a motorway or a main road. So often we're doing their work for them.
Let's leave aside the torture of the foxes for a second and the terror of the fox. Let's just leave that aside for a second and talk about convenience. Because, I love dogs generically, but one of my mom's neighbors once had a hound, and I hated that sound. And if they had a fox hunt like once a year, it's like, okay, I'll just go inside and turn on some music. But if that's a fox hunt 3 or 4 times a week, you have to put up with that sound. I mean, once again, don't get me wrong. I mean, I think this is just sadistic all the way around. But in addition, why do the neighbors put up with it when you have these bang hounds running around? That would ruin my Saturday afternoon of out, you know, playing cricket or whatever it is the hell I'm doing, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, is this...
I think there are people that...
They're bad neighbors. That's what I'm trying to say. They sound like terrible neighbors.
Yeah.
They run all over your land, they kill animals, and they also make a terrible racket.
Yeah, it's a good summing up of quite a few of the packs in this area. A lot of them do have a lot of country. They've got a huge area that they hunt over, so people won't necessarily hear them or see them. Sometimes even, you know, more than once a month, a couple of times a month. So the Heathrow's the one that David Cameron, our ex-prime minister, goes out with. They have huge area that they hunt in. So they're from the Cotswolds in Worcestershire and Gloucestershire all the way over to Oxfordshire. So they've got hundreds of square miles that they can hunt in, and they can choose any day that's good with the landowners in that area that will allow them on their land, any day that they want, across, you know, from start of November all the way until the end of March. They can hunt anywhere in that sort of hundreds of square miles area. Other hunts have merged together, so we've got the Old Surrey and Burstow and West Kent hunt down in Surrey and West Kent area, and that's the merging of three different hunts, and they've got about 200 and something square miles in which they can hunt. So again, some of the neighbours aren't even going to notice if the hunt are around more than sort of once or twice a month.
You know, it occurs to me that there is a U.S. equivalent. I live in a very right-wing, very rural community, and I probably hear gunshots three or four times a day. So let's talk a couple more things before we get to the SAB still. And what is the popularity? You said there. It sounds like the fox hunt, the pro fox hunt people can be kind of bullying. Doesn't surprise me at all. It sounds like timber people. It sounds like a lot of people who are entitled. But what if people were honest? What do you think would be the generic popularity of fox hunting, of allowing fox hunting to continue across Britain as a whole? Would if it came to an actual vote and people said, we're going to outlaw it completely, really get rid of it, or no, let's just do it, how do you think people would vote?
There are various statistics going around. Someone said to me the other day that like 80% of people are anti-hunt. But I think most of these things are decided by newspaper polls. So you've got the Daily Mail, and you ask Daily Mail readers what they think of fox hunting. You might have a lot more people saying they're pro-hunt than if you put the same poll in, say, the Guardian newspaper, which is a lot more left-wing. So it's really difficult to say, but the reason that the government were sort of pressurized into making a piece of legislation about hunting was because there was so much public pressure, and there has been so much public pressure for many, many years. I know people who are pro-hunt, as in the hunt as a spectacle, who don't want to see the animals getting killed. So they're absolutely fine if their hunt was actually trail hunting. They would be absolutely fine with that. And there probably are even members of hunt staff who are like, yeah, we don't really care that much if an animal dies or gets killed by the hounds. It's about hound work and watching the hounds do what they do best, like following the scent and making the noise, and we don't really mind so much if an animal dies at the end of it. So I think a lot of people, probably nowhere near the majority, but quite a lot of people would say that they wanted the hunt to be allowed to carry on as a spectacle, as what they do with the hounds and the horses and dressing up and staying as a community. But I think if it was a case of asking people whether the actual killing of foxes should be banned, and I think most people in the country would agree that, yeah, foxes shouldn't be persecuted by the hunt. I think there was a large majority of people who are anti-fox hunting.
So the group of friends is called the Three Counties Hunt Saboteurs. And we hear about hunt sabs. I mean, if people in the United States know one thing about fox hunting, it's the rich people with the red suits. And if they know two things about fox hunting, the second thing is that there are hunt saboteurs. So What does that actually mean? What does a hunt saboteur do?
I think it's quite like the hunt. So it sort of depends on which group that you go to. The basic principles are the same in that you want to sabotage the hunt's attempt at hunting. But the tactics that each group are using are going to differ as well. The general reputation that hunt sabs have in the UK is that we mask up, or we wear balaclavas and we run around and we shout at people and we swear. And I mean, that's coming from, you know, some people who are anti-hunt as well as the majority of the pro-hunt. I can only talk for my local group and the groups that I've been involved in the past, but the women who I work with are very, they're local to the area. They've lived in these areas for years. Everyone knows them. Even if we wanted to put face masks on, there'd be absolutely no reason to do so, because everyone would be like, hey, look, it's Emma. Hey, look, we recognize this whole group of people, even though they're all wearing balaclavas. And it tends to mean that a very, because we work in a very small group, a lot of subgroups want, you know, 10, 20 people to go out on a, to sabotage a hunt. But, you know, we'll happily go out with just one person, see whether we can do anything if we happen to spot the hunt out on a day. Or there'll be about three or four of us on a typical day when we go out to sabotage a hunt. But again, we differ from a lot of the groups because we go out quite a few times during the week as well as at the weekend, whereas a lot of SAB groups just go out on a Saturday, whether it's due to that's what they think SABbing is, or whether it's work commitments or family commitments and so on. So we do go out quite a lot during the week, which means that we do seem to have small numbers of people going out, because not everyone can go out, you know, 6 days a week in the area. The basic principles are the same. We really focus on using cameras, not necessarily because we think we're going to get prosecutions, because it's very difficult to get a prosecution of a hunt in the country. As I've explained, you need a lot of evidence of intent and actual chasing and all that. But just to get the message out there of what's still going on, especially as so many people are like, yeah, but it's illegal. Of course it's not going on anymore, but it's illegal. They banned it. So we really focus on using cameras, and a lot of hunts are terrified of getting taken to court and being prosecuted for illegal hunting or being exposed in the local papers or something like that. So a lot of them will actually stop hunting a fox if you get the fox on camera. So that's a form of sabotage in itself. We will use citronella essential oil. So we mix citronella with a lot of water. We really dilute it, and it covers the smell of a fox to a large extent. So hounds will be chasing a fox. If you can get between the fox and the hounds and spray the citronella around, then the hounds will get to that area and they'll spend some time trying to pick up on the scent of the fox again. Sometimes they won't pick it up, sometimes they will, but the fox is being given, you know, valuable 10, 20, 30 seconds extra to escape. We don't use the word save in our group unless we've actually pulled the fox out of the jaws of the hound, because a lot of the time the fox might have got away on its own, or it just needed a little bit of help. We never say, oh yeah, we saved six foxes today, because, you know, who knows what would have happened if we hadn't been there. Those six foxes might have escaped anyway. But we try to help. We try to stop the hunt from encouraging the hounds on, or we try to distract them, or we try to give that fox extra seconds with which to escape. So we also use horn calls and voice calls. So you mimic what the huntsman's doing, but you do it in a different area. So he's trying to gather the hounds over there on that side of the field. And if it's safe to do so, so there's no main roads around or anything, you try and call them back to you. And then, you know, maybe you split the pack. Some of the hounds come to you. He spends ages trying to get them back. You waste his time. That's time spent not hunting. So, yeah, it's all about sort of distraction and sabotaging attempts to kill, getting in between the fox and the hounds. As long as you're not hindering the fox's escape, basically just being there a lot of the time will help, because the hunt will be on their toes. They'll be nervous about the fact that you're there, what you're getting on camera, what you're going to do, and so on.
So unless I'm misunderstanding, all of you must be in fabulous shape, because how do you get ahead of the dogs? I can't imagine how you would get ahead of the dogs once you're on a scent.
Some of us do run quite a lot, but again, there are a lot of roads in the area, so you can drive around to different areas if you need to. Some of us go out on bikes occasionally, so we're there on our little mountain bikes going across muddy fields sometimes and trying not to fall off in front of the hunt. But again, the huntsman will go to, say, a wood or a hedgerow, and he'll stop and he'll put the hounds in there and he'll draw them through. And if you could get him to draw really, really fast, they're probably going to miss out on a fox. So you turn up in an area and he just wants to get away from you as fast as he can. The idea is to draw really slowly. So you often do have some time to sort of get into the area. You see where they're going. You're like, oh, they always go to that wood. So we'll go to that wood. you figure out sort of where the hounds are going in, so which direction a fox is likely to run out of. Obviously, it's not going to try and run through the hounds, so it'll probably go out another end of the wood. Or you think, oh, the wind's blowing this way. That means that a fox is more likely to run this way so that its smell doesn't go back towards the hounds. You know, you figure out everything sort of based on the individual situation at the time. So you do usually have a little bit of time in which to kind of get to where the hunt is hunting, and as long as you're in the general area, you can usually do some good. If the fox runs the other direction, you try and call the hounds to you. If the fox runs towards you, you intercept between the fox and the hound. So normally there is something you can do regardless of where you are, as long as you're kind of, you know, in the vicinity of the hunt.
How many people across the UK do you think are doing some form of hunt sabs? How many people do it, even, let's say, do it regularly but not necessarily every day, like once a week or once every couple of weeks? How many people do you think are doing it across the UK?
There are tens of sab groups now across the UK. It's really difficult to know how many people there might be out there. We've got a lot of anti-hunt local people who are now starting to speak up, in this area at least. We've really raised the profile of our local group. The government has recently been culling badgers as well, so they've been reducing the badger population with some dodgy science as their excuse for doing so. And a lot of people have, you know, a lot of SAB groups have come into the areas where the culling has taken place, and people are going, oh, so who are you? And you're like, well, I'm part of Three County Hunt Saboteurs. We usually sabotage fox hunts, but we're here because of the badgers tonight. People are like, but fox hunting's illegal. And you're like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. You explain it to them. And then a few days later, they call you and they say, hi, I met you the other day. There's a hunt in my area. And you go out. So you've got people who are doing their bit towards sabotage and the hunt as well by calling other people who are able to get in there. There are people going out, there are people calling the police, saying that there's an illegal fox hunt around. In terms of, you know, actual hunt saboteurs who are part of groups, the numbers also increased, I think, due to the badger culls, because people have got involved against those, or they've got involved against pheasant shooting, or other things, and they've gone, oh, well, I'd quite like to join my local SAB group now. So we're definitely in our hundreds, probably several hundred people who actually do go out. But, yeah, with some people it might only be a few times within the entire hunting season. But the numbers, I think they're on the increase again.
We only have a couple minutes left, and before we wind down, we have not really used the word sadism, and this just seems like a remarkably big production to kill someone. It just seems, the whole thing, I mean, I can understand the beauty of watching dogs work, you know, like watching herd dogs or watching guard dogs or watching any sort of dogs. I mean, dogs can be magnificent beings. And I can understand that. But, I mean, ultimately, I mean, even if you're looking at this in terms of their stated rationale of killing what they call a pest, which I don't accept, if we look at that, this is an incredibly inefficient, long-winded, terrorizing way to do it.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know. I mean, that's all. I don't really have a question. It's just this, the sadism. I mean, the whole thing is built around this killing. It's just extraordinary to me.
Yeah. And either traditions used as an excuse or pest control, and then, you know, if you were going to do pest control, there are far more effective, efficient, and probably humane ways of killing an animal anyway. But yeah, obviously, I'm not a fan of this idea of pest control either.
But it wouldn't be as fun.
Yeah, basically, there was a newspaper article a few years ago in the Telegraph, which is quite pro-Conservative Party, pro-right-wing newspaper, and the headline was something along the lines of, the real reason I enjoy fox hunting, it's jolly good fun. And actually, I was like, finally, someone's just admitted it. Finally, at least they're being honest. They're not using tradition. They're not using houndwork. They're not using pest control as an excuse. They've just gone, actually, I find it really fun. And I'm like, at least that person's being honest.
I can deal with that much better.
I can handle that.
Yeah, yeah. Much, much better. So, okay, I guess my last question, two last questions. One of them is, are there things you want to say I haven't given you an opportunity? And two, how can people both in the UK and outside the UK help with your efforts?
I think there's always a job for everyone. So whether it's supporting financially, sharing the message, spreading the word, finding out what is going on in your local area that's similar, even just getting angry and being like, oh, I want to do something. Oh, my God, there's tree felling going on nearby. I'll do something about that instead. I don't know, just sharing more information about what's going on and trying to learn more about what's happening. But, you know, people can share our message. They can like our Facebook page, or they can support us financially through donations, or just spreading the word about what we do and what other groups do, and just generally about what's happening in the world. In terms of not covering things, I could probably write books about my experiences out in the field, but so it's really just if you think there's anything that I haven't answered or I haven't said. I could talk for days more on this.
I know what I would like to end with, which is,
yeah.
Can you give your best experience or your favorite experience or one of your favorite experiences that you have had with a fox, either one that got away or just some experience with a fox?
It's probably a situation we were out with a hunt a few years ago, and is only a couple of weeks after a friend of ours actually pulled a fox out of the jaws of the hounds and it survived. And we were monitoring this hunt. We were watching them. They hadn't picked up on the scent of a fox yet. And we just looked around, and just behind this hay bale, there was this little fox, and it was just watching the hunt. And it was like, it was kind of like it was being like, haha, suckers, I'm over here. So that was a really good situation. We were like, oh God, don't move, don't make a noise, don't scare the fox. But it was really nice to see that, you know, there are still foxes out there. There have been situations where we've come across hunts blocking badger sets to stop foxes going to ground, and they've run away from us, and that's always a good situation. And while it was a really horrible experience recently, and you can find it on the internet if you want to know about it, a fox hunt in our local area called the South Herefordshire Hunt was caught keeping fox cubs at their kennels and feeding them to the hounds over the summer. While that was a really horrible experience, it was work that my local SAB group did that got the intelligence that was going on. And while it's a really horrible thing to have gone on, it was going to go on whether we found out about it or not. So I'm just really happy that our local group managed to get information through a lot of hard work that then got that hunt exposed for what they were doing. And again, has spread the word and increase the number of people who are now active against hunts in their local areas. So, yeah, we're really happy to have been part of that.
Well, thank you so much for your work. And I would like to thank listeners for listening. My guest today has been Emma Phipps. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.